This is the Does God Exist Quarterly Journal for the first quarter of 2023. John Clayton is your reader. On the cover of the journal for this quarter, we have a picture of the James Webb Telescope. It's an exciting time to be alive and to see things like this being developed by humans with their implications supporting the handiwork of God. And our lead article is titled Creation and the Webb Telescope. On Christmas Day in 2021, an incredible telescope was launched into space. It weighed 13,580 pounds and cost $10 billion American dollars. The justification for such an expensive project is that with it, we can see further into space with better resolution than ever before. For example, one of the first pictures taken by the James Webb Space Telescope, JWST is the abbreviation, was of the so-called, quote, pillars of creation, end of quote. A feature in the Eagle Nebula, 7,000 light years from Earth. This image revealed never before seen details of that nebula. The magnificent JWST will allow us to learn more about the real creation by peering many light years into the past. This telescope provides two extraordinary things. The first is its light-gathering ability. Because it is above the Earth's atmosphere and has a very large receiving surface, it can gather more light than other telescopes. At its location in space, the JWST is relatively unaffected by gravitational forces, so the time exposures can be very long. The second property is its resolving power, which is the ability of a lens system to separate point sources of light. For example, suppose you had a car facing out on a lake with both headlights turned on. Poor resolving power would cause an observer across the lake to see just one light. Good resolving power would see both headlights. Early Earth-based telescope looked at what we now know as the Andromeda Galaxy and saw a fuzzy light, to use the words of the astronomer. Later telescopes were larger and had better resolving power, enabling astronomers to see that fuzzy light was actually billions of stars. The Webb telescope can look at Andromeda and see that there are planets going around many of the stars, something Earth-based telescopes could never see. How can the Webb telescope see into the past? This confusing statement is true because light travels at a fixed speed of approximately 186,000 miles per second. Even at that speed, it takes a long time for it to travel across the distances in space. Light from the sun takes 8 minutes and 20 seconds to reach Earth. When you look at the sunrise or sunset, you are seeing the sun as it was 8 minutes and 20 seconds ago. If the sun suddenly died, it would be 8 minutes and 20 seconds before we would know it here on Earth. We measure space distances in light years, which is the distance light can travel in 1 year. That's 5,878,625,373,200 miles. It's a long way. The North Star, Polaris, is 323 light years away. So we see it as it was 323 years ago. The Webb telescope can see objects that are 13 billion light years away. That means we are seeing light that left those objects 13 billion years ago. And doubtless they have changed or gone out of existence since then. The Webb telescope can see objects within a span between 8 and 9 light years wide. And for those of you who are astronomy students, that's 15,000 pixels. It is essential to understand that the JWST can see those objects, but how they got there is not a subject which the Webb telescope is designed to answer. Real creation is the production of matter from nothing. The Bible makes it clear that this happened from a dimension outside of space and time. The concept of acting outside of space and time describes God, and agrees with the simple statement of Genesis 1:1. Quantum mechanics and the newest understandings of modern physics allow and show more and more evidence that this is how creation came about, but that has nothing to do with what the Webb telescope is seeing. So what does the Webb telescope tell us? What are the real, quote, pillars of creation, end of quote? And what did they tell us about the processes God used to produce the world where we live? Because of its excellent resolving power, the Webb telescope shows us cocoons of dust collapsing under the forces of gravity. As those cocoons collapse, they heat up, and the Webb telescope can measure the temperatures to verify the temperature rise. When the cocoon gets small enough and hot enough, the materials in the cocoon, mostly hydrogen, fuse into heavier elements, and a star is born. The Webb telescope shows us the making of stars, not the creation of stars. God created the material from which stars are made long before the fusion process began. Smaller telescopes have enabled us to see the death of stars. When a star runs out of fuel, nuclear processes produce a change in stellar material. Different stars change the nuclear process in different ways. A nova is an explosion of a star. But there are several different kinds of explosions depending on the star's mass. These processes produce other elements we see in the periodic chart of chemistry. Colossal explosions in the supermassive stars called supernovas produce heavy elements like uranium and lead and gold. Lighter elements such as carbon, sulfur, oxygen, potassium, sodium, and so forth are produced in less massive stars. The cosmos is not a dead creation that God wound up and let go to die. It is a living, dynamic thing that continues to grow, expand, and change. God is still active and continually working to sustain his creation as the elements are recycled and reworked. Black holes provide waste receptacles to dispose of finished matter. The Webb telescope allows us to see the continual process of new materials being produced. This is the way God works. Life itself is constantly changing, and biology is another dynamic field where we can watch the design and processing of life, allowing life to survive in every nook and cranny of our planet. Between the Webb telescope and massive nuclear accelerators, we continually gain more understanding of what God has done and how the creation has come to be as it is. The complexity we see and the incredible power and wisdom it displays speak of God. In Proverbs 8, beginning with verse 1 and on through verses 22 through 23, wisdom speaks to all the people about creation. And this is what she says about the creation and God. Quote, does not wisdom cry out and understanding put forth her voice? For wisdom is on the top of high places. She stands between the ways and by the paths. She stands by the side of the gates at the entrance of the city saying, O man, I am calling to you. My appeal is to all men. Become expert in reason, O you simple ones, you foolish ones. Take training to heart. The Lord made me at the start of his way, the first of his works in the past, and the outset of the ages had I been established. What a wonderful thing it is to be living in 2022 and 2023, when we have tools that enable us to see this wisdom firsthand. To the ancients who did not have the tools, the simple statement in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth was enough. We can now say with greater understanding, quote, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the skies proclaim the work of his hands. Psalms 19 and verse 1. Creation of heaven and earth. As scientists find more and more evidence, the picture of creation becomes clearer. That is not to say that science has the entire creation of heaven and earth figured out. However, studies have allowed us to see what was done, even if we don't understand and will never understand how it was done in this life. Science has identified four fundamental forces involved in creation. They are electromagnetic force, the weak nuclear force, the strong nuclear force, and the gravitational force. These forces work on particles that science has observed or particles for which science has found evidence but has not observed. For example, photons are responsible for electromagnetism. Particles called gluons are responsible for nuclear forces, with 8 gluons causing a strong nuclear force and 3 gluons causing a weak nuclear force. The recently discovered particle called the Higgs boson gives mass to the force particles and controls their behavior. Physicists are studying how that happens and looking for a particle that causes the gravitational force. As research continues, science strongly suggests that these forces begin as a single force. Our standard rules of physics cannot deal with this concept, and the time during which the forces originated is called the Planck era. The creation of heaven and earth is a complex process, and science is trying to understand it. The so-called standard model of particle physics has so much supporting evidence that most physicists accept it as a starting point to understanding the creation process. Some scientists have developed an approach called string theory to understand what took place in the Planck era. The mathematics of string theory forces us to believe that creation has come about from higher dimensions than our own. The prominent string theory called bulk has creation originating in an 11-dimensional arena. We live in a 3-dimensional world with time as a 4th-dimensional quantity. The idea of 11 dimensions is beyond our comprehension. Although we can describe it mathematically, we cannot visualize it. The Bible summarizes the creation of heaven and earth by simply indicating that an intelligence in a far higher dimension than our own created time, space, and the physical world in which we exist. Quote, "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth," end of quote, accurately describes what our research and observations tell us. In summary, there was a beginning, often described as the Big Bang. In that beginning, there was Planck time when our laws of physics did not apply. The creation event was caused by Elohim, an intelligence outside of space-time, operating in dimensions outside our physical universe. The creation included the matter energy from which everything is made, and the 3-dimensional space, Shamrahim, translated as heaven in your Bible. It also included the planet we call home, Eretz in Hebrew, created from that matter energy. In the simple words of Genesis 1:1, they describe something that we have yet to fully comprehend. The more we know of the creation, the more we know of the Creator. The Four Forces of Nature by Kennel Turim as a guest writer. Physicists have identified four forces in nature, also called interactions, that are needed to maintain the stability of the cosmos. The forces work over radically different ranges and at different strengths. These are the electromagnetic force that is mediated by photons, the strong force mediated by gluons, the weak force mediated by the W and Z bosons, and the force of gravity mediated by the gravitons. Gravity is the weakest force, but has an infinite range. Physicists are attempting to unify these forces under one mathematical framework called the grand theory. These attempts have been successful for the first three forces, the electromagnetic force, the weak force, and unified under electroweak theory, and the strong interaction is unified with the electroweak force at a higher energies. But to date, Their efforts have failed to unify the force of gravity with the other forces. There are two realities, physical and spiritual, connected to one another. The weak and strong interactions work in tandem to generate the massive power of our sun and all the stars in the universe. The weak nuclear force is a fundamental force of nature that underlies some forms of radioactivity, governs the decay of unstable subatomic particles such as mesons, and initiates the nuclear fusion reaction that fuels the sun and all stars. And this enormous power coming through weakness, I see an analogy to the cross being the weakness of God that is stronger than man's strength. That's a quote of 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 25, further illustrated in 2 Corinthians 13 and verse 4. Quote, "He was crucified in weakness, yet he lives by God's power. Likewise, we are weak in him, yet by God's power we will live with him in our dealing with you." End of quote. I believe anyone who limits reality to the physical world and ignores or denies the spiritual may have difficulty solving the problem of a unified theory. For a physicist who accepts spiritual reality in addition to the physical world, unification may come as natural. We read in Hebrews 11 and verse 3, quote, "What is seen was not made of what was visible," end of quote. In other words, the visible, the tangible, is inextricably linked to the invisible. In fact, the invisible is the source of the visible. There are two realities, physical and spiritual, connected to one another. If that is true, the bold statement of Hebrews 1 and verse 3, quote, "The Son sustains all things by his powerful word," end quote, may hold the solution to the long-sought grand unification theory. We can see two realities as coming together to make Christ the source of the unified theory. As we read in Colossians 1 and verse 17, "He is before all things, and in him all things hold together," unquote. We can see how God, the invisible, interacts with his creation, the visible, in the virgin birth of Christ. The conception of Christ by the Holy Spirit was a direct act of God, but Mary's pregnancy continued as any normal pregnancy would, lasting for 9 months, and is an example of God's indirect action using the laws of nature. C.S. Lewis used the word seamless to describe the boundary between God's direct and indirect interaction with his creation. That's from God in the Dark, Essays on Theology and Ethics, 1974, copyright Erdmann's, page 37. As the creator of all reality, God can use fiat creation of the physical universe or evolving creation over eons to achieve his purpose. Through the prophet Isaiah, God tells us, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, and neither are my ways your ways." Isaiah 55 and verse 8. Another example of this seamless interaction is recorded in Mark 4, verses 35 through 41. In this account, Jesus and his disciples are crossing the Sea of Galilee in a boat when a sudden squall arises, putting the disciples in great danger. Although Jesus is with them in the boat, God's indirect action, he is tired and is asleep. The disciples become gripped by fear, terrified that they will perish in the storm. They awaken Jesus and ask him, quote, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" End of quote. And Jesus stands up and commands the wind to stop, and immediately the wind ceases, and the sea becomes completely calm. This is an example of God through Christ interacting directly with the natural world. Jesus then admonishes his disciples, asking why they are so afraid. Quote, "Do you still have no faith?" End of quote. The disciples should have remembered the passage from Psalms 23 where David says, quote, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." End of quote. In a single story, we see God acting both indirectly and directly. Ultimately, there is only one reality with two aspects. The arguments that often divide Christians regarding the issue of how much God interacts with his creation directly and or indirectly should not cause acrimonious separations, as they often do. The ID community and the evolutionary creationist agree that God acts in our world. It is the naturalist that denies the existence of God in all affairs of humanity, including how the universe came into existence. That must resort to natural laws only, seldom questioning how so-called natural laws came into existence. My colleagues in the American Scientific Affiliation should take to heart the fact that God interacts with his creation both indirectly and directly. Dealing with Media Bias by Thayer Salisbury. It is upsetting. These days, it also seems inevitable. Lies are told and many people believe them. Maybe that was overstated. Sometimes it is a half-truth or a conjecture stated as a proven fact rather than a direct and intentional lie. But the result is pretty much the same. Children are growing up with a lot of false information in their heads. Many adults are making decisions based on false information. And this false information is not always coming from off-the-wall fringe internet sites. Often these days, highly respected sources cannot be trusted. Let me give you a few examples. A couple of years ago, I read an article about some little-known pyramids in Sudan. The author stated that these pyramids had been emptied of their contents centuries ago by European grave robbers. This statement interested me. I'm not an expert on that part of Africa, but I do have knowledge of its history. By the way, Thayer is living in Africa. I knew that European influence came late to that area. I knew that the area had a lengthy history of intertribal strife. Intertribal strife often leads to grave robbing. Desecrating graves shows quite clearly that, quote, "We do not respect your ancestors or believe they have power over us," end of quote. I knew the area also had a long history of Arab slave trading. I knew that the first looting of the better-known pyramids in Egypt had been carried out by Arabs, even though Europeans did plenty at the later date. So I wondered how the author knew that Europeans had looted the pyramids in Sudan. Not being shy in these matters, I wrote the editor of the journal in which the article appeared. Evidently, the author had no proof for his claim. But he certainly was not going to admit that, nor was the editor going to allow my letter to see the light of day. I was impolitely ignored. No proof whatsoever was offered. This might not exactly be a lie. Those who looted the Sudanese pyramids may have been Europeans. That is certainly a possibility, but it is not known to be a fact. In fact, it was stated as a fact. No other possibility was mentioned, even though at least two other possibilities exist, and even seem just as likely. Another example from the same highly respected publication. I am excited about the possibilities of renewable energy. I know there are problems with solar and wind power, but I believe we will soon work many of those out. So I was pleased to see an article on offshore wind turbines at Block Island, a part of the state of Rhode Island. I was pleased with what I read in the article until I came to this deceptive statement. Quote, "Lewis objected to the wind farm because of the political process that, he said, led to the power purchase agreement with the National Grid, the utility company. Now all Rhode Islanders are paying too much for clean energy," he and others contended, while wind farm developers made a killing. Yet a recent analysis of Block Island power rates, which vary by season, found that the cost per kilowatt hour, if averaged over a year, is 40% lower than it was before the wind farm went online, end of quote. Did you catch that? Do you see the dishonesty? A person reading quickly will think that the author disproved the point made by those who object to the wind farm. But the author compared apples to oranges. The objector's point was that the people of the state of Rhode Island were paying more. The author responded with a statistic that is completely irrelevant to that question. No one had denied that the people of Block Island, some of the wealthiest people in the world, were paying less. The claim was that the mainland residents of Rhode Island were paying more, so that rich folks on Block Island could pay less, and the wind farm company could make a huge profit. Instead of answering this objection, the author used a trick to confuse the reader. Both of these examples came from a highly respected publication, Smithsonian. I have respected that publication since I was a child. Unfortunately, I respect it no more. The editors are willing to allow unsupported claims and cheap verbal tricks. If either can be used to get people to believe something the editors want. I caught these two. I wonder how often I have read too quickly and overlooked their dishonesty. A final example. This one comes from the recent BBC video mini-documentary about archaeology. About halfway through this documentary, the narrator, who claims to be a biblical scholar, makes this statement about the professor digging at Tel Es-Safi. Quote, one of his recent finds contradicts the biblical caricature of Philistines as barbarians, end of quote. The narrator goes on to indicate that the Bible consistently presents the Philistines as backward and the Israelites as more advanced. Do you see the problem with that? Most people will not. Most people, like this documentary's poorly trained or dishonest narrator, know next to nothing about the Bible. They're perfectly willing to read the modern use of the term Philistine back into the Bible. But why? Where does the Bible present the Israelites as a more highly developed people than the Philistines? This is the exact opposite of what the Bible indicates. The Bible plainly says that the Philistines were more advanced than the Israelites. Quote, now there was no blacksmith to be found throughout the land of Israel, for the Philistines had said, lest the Hebrews make themselves swords or spears. But every one of the Israelites went down to the Philistines to sharpen his plowshare, his mattock, his axe, or his sickle. And the charge was 2/3 of a shekel for the plowshares and for the mattocks, and 1/3 of a shekel for sharpening axes and for setting the goads. So on the day of battle, there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people with Saul and Jonathan. But Saul and Jonathan, his son, had them, end of quote. That's 1 Samuel 13, verses 19 through 22. If we were to reword the narrator's statement to make it factual instead of dishonest and misleading, it would be, quote, one of the recent finds confirms the biblical description of the Philistines as more advanced than the Israelites, end of quote. The cure. Some of you may have the time to write letters of protest. I do not. I have tried that and found it to be a waste of time. The letters will be ignored. These people have an agenda, and they will promote it. But there are some things we can do. Make sure you know your Bible well. The BBC narrator can put over that false statement only because people do not read the Bible for themselves. Read alertly. Question the logic. If you catch an author or a publication using verbal tricks that seem to indicate the facts are not on their side, do not be taken in by claims that this view or that ideals is progressive. Those who claim that, quote, you cannot put the clock back, end of quote, are ignoring the fact that you can put a clock back. C.S. Lewis suggests that if the clock is giving the wrong time, putting it back is progressive. Sticking with a bad idea just because it is labeled progressive is the most regressive thing one can do. Train your children, grandchildren, and anyone else you can influence to question claims, even claims made by supposedly respected sources. Let me end on one more lighthearted note. Of course, one would expect the Major League Baseball website to give accurate information regarding baseball. But a few years ago, I noticed that the Major League Baseball site claimed that Willie Mays hit 4 home runs against the Brewers on April the 30th, 1961. Wrong. There was no team known as the Brewers in 1961. That team did not exist until 1970. The Brewers played its first game against the Giants, that's Willie's team, in 1998, by which time Willie Mays was long retired. In this case, someone just goofed. The Rodgers saw that the game was played in Milwaukee and confused the Milwaukee Braves with the Milwaukee Brewers. Some errors are just oversights, but even in more respected publications, some may be intentional. But whether intentional or not, errors on more serious subjects can be harmful. Be alert. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 20 says, avoid the irrelevant babble and contradictions of what is falsely called knowledge. Scientists and God. No atheists attempt to suggest that scientists are intelligent people who have rejected faith and do not believe in God. The fact is that some of the most productive scientists who have ever lived were believers in God. In this column, we share some of their thoughts with you. And our scientist for this quarterly issue is Louis Pasteur, who lived from 1822 to 1895. He was a French chemist and a microbiologist renowned for his discoveries of the principles of vaccination, microbial fermentation, and pasteurization. And here's what Pasteur had to say. The idea of God is a form of the idea of the infinite. As long as the mystery of the infinite weighs on human thought, temples will be erected for the worship of the infinite. And on the pavement of those temples, men will be seen kneeling prostrate, annihilated in the thought of the infinite. At these supreme moments, there is something in the depth of our souls which tells us that the world may be more than a mere continuation of phenomena, proper to a mechanical equilibrium brought out of the chaos of the elements through which the gradual action of the forces of nature. Cynthia's Corner by Cynthia Clayton. The Webb Telescope and God. I'm not a scientist, Cynthia says. Far from it. But since marrying John, I've had the opportunity to learn firsthand how he makes science understandable and practical for all ages, intellects, and interests. His ministry about science and faith not only being compatible but mutually beneficial has helped people of all ages and backgrounds come to a better understanding of who and what God is. So what does the Webb Telescope tell us about creation and God? John tells me that the Webb Telescope can see back in time some 13 billion years because of how long it takes light to travel from the furthest stars to us. That's mind-blowing to me. But it's also evidence of God's existence. Why? Because the Webb Telescope can see the beginning of the cosmos, the beginning of time. That means the creation had a beginning. Science has proven what the Bible states in Genesis 1:1. We know the beginning was caused, since any beginning must have a cause. Since life requires too many properties to happen by chance, that cause must have wisdom and design ability. It is easy to see the absurdity of chance being the cause. The universe, our planet, and life are all too complex to have happened by chance. All a non-science person has to know is that this powerful telescope lets us see further into space than ever before. We are witnessing the processes God has used to produce stars, galaxies, and other planets. We are coming to understand the cosmic forces involved in creation. These discoveries add more weight to the fact that there was a beginning to the cosmos. The Bible tells us what that source of the beginning was. Science is discovering what God has done to create, quote, the heavens and the earth, end of quote, and understanding how he did it. Proverbs 8:22 tells us that God possessed wisdom in all he did in the creation. We don't need to understand God's processes to look through our telescopes and microscopes and be amazed by the very big and the very small. Truly, the heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they display knowledge. Danny Designs. Optimized teamwork. It may look like a bloated jellyfish floating on the surface of tropical marine waters, but it is a colony of siphonophores. Siphonophores are a bizarre animal group consisting of colonies of hundreds to thousands of genetically identical individual creatures. The strangely named Portuguese man of war is an amazing part of the ocean's extensive web of life. The siphonophore begins as a fertilized egg and buds as it develops. The budding action forms distinct structures and organisms called polyps. These teeny organisms cannot survive independently, so they merge into a tentacled mass. A mass of polyps cooperate as one creature to travel and catch food. The species cannot properly function without every polyp as a part of the system. Even though all of the polyps that make up the Portuguese man of war are clones, they come in unique shapes and serve different purposes. Some polyps form tentacles to trap prey, some digest food, and some facilitate reproduction. How each part of the animal knows its role is beyond our comprehension, but is quite indicative of God's design. Teeny fish comprise about 70 to 90% of the man-of-war diet. Surprisingly, small fish still choose to live among the siphonophore's tentacles. They aren't immune to its stings and must swim nimbly between the stingers. The fish eat the leftovers of paralyzed prey that the animal avoids. In this instance, the fish are provided with shelter and food, while the Portuguese man of war is fulfilling its ecosystem role. The resident fish speed up the decomposition process of the leftovers from the man of war's diet. Although it has excellent defense with its venomous sting, the Portuguese man of war still manages to have a long list of enemies. Loggerhead turtles in the ocean and some ocean fish are thick-skinned enough to eat the man of war. Blue dragon sea slugs can devour the animal in appropriate toxins. They store the stinging cells as a predator deterrent. That means the Portuguese man of war benefits blue dragon sea slugs long after death. Humans often use teamwork to accomplish things, but this animal could not live without it. The complexity of this sea creature provides too much evidence for intelligent design and engineering for us to ignore. News and notes. Bird brains and efficient neurons. In the past, calling someone a bird brain was an insult because people believed birds weren't very smart. A new study of bird brains by researchers in Germany shows that bird neurons are more energy efficient than those of mammals. For example, pigeon neurons use 3 times less energy than mammal neurons. Birds are designed to do many things requiring brain power, including flying and singing complex vocalizations. The lead researcher of this study suggests that the brains of birds are organized so the neurons can more easily exchange signals. Organization does not come out of random chance mutations. It requires an organizer. The brains of all animals are designed to allow them to live in a particular environment. Humans are unique because we can alter the environment rather than being altered by it. Also, our brains allow activities such as art, music, complex mathematics, worship, and the ability to be taught to think. Our spiritual nature sets us apart and allows our creative activity and our understanding that there is life beyond grave. Alcohol consumption during pregnancy. The most destructive recreational drug on the planet is alcohol. The consequences of alcohol consumption are more than tragic accidents. New research on alcohol consumption during pregnancy indicates that the damage of alcohol is more pervasive than anyone believed 10 years ago. Researchers at the University of Vienna have revealed their fetal development study showing that even 1 glass of wine a week by the mother can significantly reduce her baby's brain development. The major damage was in the right superior temporal sulcus. That region of the brain involves social cognition and language development. With careless environmental pollution and recreational drugs, having a healthy baby is more of a challenge than ever before. We cannot expect God to constantly undo what we have done to ourselves individually and collectively. Living in fear in today's world. According to the Boston Globe, 80% of college students are living in fear. The article says that activists and administrators have created a us versus them mentality. This applies to race, pronoun usage, and political views, creating intense, persistent, and excessive worry and fear about everyday situations. People today are living in fear because they have adopted, quote, survival of the fittest, end of quote, as their guide for dealing with one another. That means I can denigrate those I deem less fit and treat them as less valuable. All abuse of others is rooted in this belief system. Carried to extremes, it even applies to political differences. Recently, a female member of Congress suggested killing a political opponent to advance her concept of democracy. No wonder people are living in fear. The Christian belief system eliminates living in fear. John, writing his excellent dissertation on love in 1 John 4, 7-21, says it beautifully. Quote, "There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, because fear has torment. He that fears is not made perfect in love. We love him because he first loved us. If a man says, 'I love God,' and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother, whom he has seen, cannot love God, whom he has not seen." Verses 18 through 20. Living in an atheistic world is challenging, and fear reflects that. Therefore, Christian faith and morality are more important than ever, not just on an eternal level, but even in our day-to-day lives. How long does a mother carry her child? We all know that a mother carries her unborn child for 9 months, but most people don't realize that a mother carries her child for decades. But that is true even of a woman who chooses to abort her child. Scientists see microchimerism, in which fetal cells and DNA are left behind in the mother's body. An unborn baby is not part of a mother's body and has his or her own DNA. The baby is like a foreign object inside the mother. That's the reason for morning sickness, as a mother's immune system tries to reject it. The often repeated slogan, "My body, my choice," end quote, does not consider that the baby is not part of the woman's body and has no choice in the matter. The unborn baby gets nourishment through the placenta as it connects to the mother's arteries. However, the baby can also shed some cells and DNA, which enter the mother's bloodstream as early as 2 weeks after conception. These fetal cells can find a home in various organs of the mother, including her heart and brain. Since those cells are from different person, the result is microchimerism. The woman has part of another person remaining inside her body. Scientists have found that a mother carries her child for decades as the baby cells remain in her. If she has more than one child, she can retain cells from each of them in her body, just as science has found that stem cells can be helpful in medical treatments because they form into different kinds of cells. The potent cells from the baby can become pancreas, heart, liver, or brain cells in the mother, or they become stem cells. Scientists have found cells from the baby in the scar tissue after cesarean birth, indicating the baby's cells are helping the mother to heal. Not only do fetal cells continue in the mother after normal birth, but also they are left behind when there is a miscarriage or medical abortion. Surprisingly, studies indicate that more cells are left in the mother after an induced abortion than in a natural miscarriage. This means that a mother carries her child for decades. As mother carry with them a part of their children, there is a good reason for the bonding between mother and child. Even when a woman decides to end her baby's life before birth, she still carries some of that child with her. Being a mother is a precious blessing, and abortion is not something to be taken lightly. Jesus Christ challenges people to think. People today refuse to use evidence to make decisions on everything from personal relationships to politics. One of the unique things we find in the Bible is that Jesus Christ challenges people to think. In the book of Matthew, Jesus uses the phrase, "What do you think?" 5 times. You want to look them up at 17:25, 18:12, 21:28, 22:17, and 22:42. Those are all in the book of Matthew. Jesus never called his listeners to blind acceptance or thoughtless adherence to authority. In biblical Christianity, faith is not an emotionally based response. Jesus challenges people to think. But as long as people refuse to use their minds and examine the evidence, skepticism and chaos will result. Throughout the Bible, we find encouragement to look at the evidence and know that God is real and that his word should guide our lives. Read Psalms 19, verse 1, Psalm 53, Psalms 139, verse 14, Proverbs 8, Matthew 6, verses 26 through 30, Acts 17, verses 22 through 31, and Romans 1, verses 18 through 20. God rewards those who seek to understand and never calls us to blind acceptance. The concept of infinity and God. The biblical description of God as omnipresent, omnipotent, and eternal involves concepts that skeptics refuse to accept. The foundation of the atheist worldview rejects an infinite eternity in heaven. Likewise, mathematicians rejected the concept of infinity for many years, until the end of the 19th century. However, infinity exists, and mathematics doesn't make sense without it. Euclid's geometry deliberately excluded the idea of anything infinitely small or infinitely large. The Greeks believed they could describe the entire universe with positive rational numbers. However, the value of pi requires an irrational number with an infinite decimal representation. The value of pi is an irrational number because even at 100 places, it does not end. The digits after the decimal point are infinite. Legend says that Hippasus, the first to provide that irrational numbers exist, was executed when he published his proof. The scholarly group known as the Pythagorean Brotherhood was vocal about naturalism, denying the existence of the infinite. Eventually, it became evident that their view of the cosmos was impossible. And yet here in the 21st century, we find that denial of the concept of infinity is still the thinking of those who reject the biblical concept of God. You can't understand your life as having an infinite purpose if you reject the concept of infinity. The concept of the infinite is contained in the statement of Jesus to Matthew in Matthew 20 and verse 16. So the last will be first, and the first last. For whosoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoso loses his life for my sake will find it. Read Matthew 16 and verse 25. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 11 tells us that God has set eternity in the hearts of humanity. The biblical concept of eternity makes sense, and the history of mathematics strongly supports it. Plant survival and how it works. Have you ever thought about the fact that everything in the natural world directly or indirectly eats plants? Not just animal life, but bacteria, viruses, and pathogens also attack plants. Plant survival depends on an immune system. Animals are protected by specialized immune cells that travel throughout the bloodstream to a place of infection. A plant doesn't have a bloodstream, so each plant cell synthesizes proteins to attack an infection while suppressing the normal functions of photosynthesis and growth. A plant must perform a complex balancing act. The infection will destroy the plant if it doesn't produce enough defense proteins. If the plant produces too much defense protein, its growth will be stunted. Plant biologists are still trying to understand how plants can resist infection while still growing and carrying on their normal functions. That ability is built into the design of the plant's DNA. When you look at a plant, you might think it's a simple thing whose functions we understand. However, every plant is a showcase for the wisdom and design of God. Nanofibrils of spider silk. Would you like to see a material that is stronger than steel and stretches 10 times more than Kevlar? If so, look at a spider web and marvel at the design of the microscopic nanofibrils of spider silk. Researchers have used atomic force microscopy and nuclear magnetic resonance to examine the molecular structure of spider silk as never before. The nanofibrils of spider silk are fibers with diameters in the nanometer range, 10,000 times smaller than a human hair. Spiders generate them using proteins. At a molecular level, scientists saw six distinct protein substructures making up the nanofibrils of spider silk, giving it incredible strength and resilience. They hope their research will lead to the development of high-performance synthetic fibers. Studying God's design in nature has led to an incredible number of things that make our lives more comfortable and enable us to solve some of the problems we face. Romans 1:20 tells us we can know there is a God through the things he has made. And one of those things is the nanofibrils of spider silk. Legalizing assisted suicide. The Netherlands has been a trailblazer in legalizing abortion, same-sex marriage, and euthanasia. For many years, that country has had a euthanasia law that allows doctors to actively kill a patient with an injection of drugs. Last year, a group called the Cooperative Last Will filed a suit to force the Dutch government into legalizing assisted dying. It's to provide patients with a legal substance so they can take themselves. On December 14, 2022, the Hague District Court rejected the group's arguments, affirming Nederland's ban on assisted suicide. The Cooperative Last Will was making plans to appeal the decision. From a purely secular standpoint, there are obvious problems with this issue. There are times in life when you hit rock bottom, and dying can look pretty good. However, people thinking of taking their own lives are not considering what their death does to those who love them and to their obligations to society. The Christian view of life and the physical body is explained in 1 Corinthians 3:16, 17. It tells us that the body is the temple of the Spirit and expresses God's displeasure with anyone destroying it. Therefore, legalizing assisted suicide to allow distressed individuals to end their lives is filled with problems. And that's the end of the Does God Exist Quarterly Journal for the Visually Impaired for the first quarter of 2023. I hope we've challenged you to think, look at the evidence in a different way, and to understand that science is knowledge, and science and faith are symbiotic in nature. They support each other. And to say that another way, you can intelligently and logically and reasonably believe in God and in the Bible as His Word. This is John Clayton thanking you for listening and hoping that you have a wonderful day.